limbo, neither being paid for, nor is it then reclaimed by the financial institution who holds the mortgage. Also, site investigations are more comprehensive, principally due to the heightened concern over hazardous substances and the need to determine the full extent of contamination and potential health hazards associated with a site. Consequently, DEQ oversight of site investigations has become more resource-intensive. Our existing resources and authorities have become inadequate to ensure that the known abandoned and uncontrolled sites can properly be investigated and cleaned up. In September of 1986, I appointed a Remedial Action Advisory Committee to assist the department in developing recommendations on strengthening the state's capability in cleanup of contaminated sites. Committee membership includes representatives of industry, technical experts, local government, environmentalists, and the public. Full listing is in Attachment 5. I want to point out that three representatives of the UST Advisory Committee, again that's the Underground Storage Tank Advisory Committee, also are members of the Remedial Action Advisory Committee. This is to ensure that an integrated approach to remedial action be developed which addresses both leaks from tanks as well as other releases. Many issues have been identified, discussed at length, and appropriately resolved by the committee. This is not to say all issues are resolved. Senate Bill 122 represents the department's proposal for developing the state's capability to protect the health of its citizens and quality of the state's environment from the threats posed by contaminated sites and leaking tanks. Our experience to date has shown that federal cleanup funds will not be available to address the majority of Oregon's contaminated sites. Consequently, Senate Bill 122 proposes to expand the uses of the CERCLA matching fund beyond just providing the state match. That expansion is to include the following: site assessments, remedial investigations, soil, water, and air sampling and analyses, groundwater investigations, feasibility studies, risk assessments, community relations and citizen participation activities, because that's a key part of making sure that the cleanups are understood and accepted by the communities in which they occur, engineering design, site cleanup, and finally operation and maintenance of those cleanup measures. The existing CERCLA matching fund would be renamed the Hazardous Substances Remedial Action Fund to reflect the additional authorities authorized uses of the fund. The department proposes to continue a hazardous waste disposal fee at the Arlington disposal site to support the Hazardous Substance Remedial Action Fund for investigation, cleanup, and administrative expenses. The amount of the fee is proposed to increase from the existing $10 per ton to $20 per ton. This fee level would be sufficient to meet the program level contained in the governor's budgeted request. The fee is collected by CSSI, Kim Securities, the operator of the facility, and that it is taken from hazardous waste generators shipping waste to the site at Arlington. As I said before, let me stress again, approximately 80% of the revenue is derived from out-of-state shipments coming into the site. To address the groundwater and soil contamination problems associated with leaks from underground storage tanks, Senate Bill 122 also proposes to establish a state-administered leaking underground storage tank fund. The Lost Cleanup Fund would be available for the same purposes as the Hazardous Substance Remedial Action Fund, but for sites contaminated by leaking underground storage tanks. Additionally, the fund could be used to provide the required state match for using the federal Lost Trust Fund. Again, that's a fund that was created under the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, which provides for a total of $500 million for cleanup being able to be drawn on by the states. The State Lust Cleanup Fund is proposed to be supported by a fee on underground tank owners or operators. The fee schedule would be set by the Environmental Quality Commission. We estimate that an annual fee of $8, only $8, per tank would support the department's lust remedial action activities during the 87-89 biennium as contained in the governor's recommended budget. These two funds, the Hazardous Substance Remedial Action Fund and the Lust Cleanup Fund, are essential to establish the state's capability to investigate and oversee cleanups and leaks from underground storage tanks and other contaminated sites. I do want to point out, however, that the proposed fees may not raise sufficient revenue for monitoring or conducting investigations and cleanups at all sites. This is but because we do not know how many contaminated sites we will find, how extensive the contamination is, and whether there is or will be a responsible party who will conduct the investigation and cleanup on their own with their own resources. I've next attached in my testimony a section-by-section analysis. What I'd like to do is to skip over that and turn to, in my testimony, to page 14, because I'd like to address a couple of amendments that we have that are particularly critical here. As you may have noted, and in my testimony, Senate Bill 122, as pre-session filed, it does not address the question of who should be liable for contaminated sites and the associated cleanup costs. As I mentioned in my testimony on Monday relative to Senate Bill 115, that we do not establish liability, or that we have not yet established liability for those actions in that bill either. Obviously, liability for cleanup is an important, critical issue. The omission of liability language in Senate Bill 122 and 115 was intentional, and it was made to allow us adequate time for full discussion of this issue with representatives of our advisory committees and other interested parties during the past several months. We are now proposing, in an amendment to Senate Bill 122, being submitted to you today, a section to address the issue of liability for all contaminated sites, including leaking underground storage tanks. I would like to discuss the major points in this liability section. First, let me describe for you how and why the Federal Superfund Law deals with liability. The Federal Superfund Liability Scheme initially casts a very large net, capturing as potentially liable parties for cleanup many persons who were associated with a contaminated site or with the waste sent to a contaminated site. For example, generators of hazardous substances, transporters who select a disposal site, and past and current owners and operators of contaminated sites are made strictly, jointly, and severally liable. This liability extends to the cleanup costs incurred by federal, state, or local government, or any other person, and for damages to natural resources. Having captured the broadest number of persons possible as potentially liable, Superfund then provides for defenses against this liability in certain cases, such as the following: acts of God or war, and acts or omissions of a third party, provided that the defendant proves that they exercised due care and took precautions against the foreseeable acts of such third parties. It is important to note that these are defenses from liability. That is, a waste generator or transporter or other potentially liable party is initially considered liable and must prove they qualify for the liability defense before they are considered innocent. In addition, joint and several liability for these persons means that when there are multiple liable parties contributing to an indivisible harm, that is, you cannot go into a site and say that this source created this problem and this source created this separate problem, not divisible, that any party which contributed to the harm can be held liable for the entire amount of cleanup costs and damages. That is joint and several liability. Joint and several liability is applied under federal law in order to find a deep pockets at a site. A deep pockets essentially is any liable party who, regardless of culpability or extent of contribution to the contamination, has the financial capability to carry out a cleanup. The federal Superfund liability policy is aimed at finding sufficient private resources to clean up sites because of a recognition that the federal Superfund is not and will not be large enough to do the job. As a result, however, the federal policy results in what, in my opinion, are inequities, requiring people to pay for cleanups when they are not culpable or disproportionately have to pay for cleanup disproportionate to their culpability. The federal policy also forces truly innocent parties to spend large sums of money to defend and prove their innocence. One of the examples that is used as one of the list of terribles in such a case is from the Western Processing Superfund cleanup in the state of Washington. Western Processing duly recorded all hazardous waste that was sent to that site. When they were determined that it was a Superfund site and letters went out to all potential responsible parties that they may be held liable, an individual who had sent two bottles of partially full Drano to the site, properly disposed of and recorded, received one of those potential responsible party letters. Clearly, in that case, they would be able to find, as a defense, being able to be held outside. But it gives you a sense of how broad that net can go under the federal program. Let me again stress, by the way, to hold that, clearly EPA would not have, in that case, attempted to collect from that individual. But it does tell you that there is potential liability given how the federal law has been written. The department's proposal on liability, as contained in our proposed amendments, takes a different approach. Liability for cleanup of contaminated sites would be based on actual participation, that is to say, culpability, for the acts or omissions that resulted in contamination. Consequently, site owners or operators who are the victims of migration of hazardous substances, vandalism, or previous owners would not be liable for cleanup unless it is shown that they acted irresponsibly or they caused or exacerbated the contamination. Likewise, generators of hazardous substances who acted in compliance with applicable laws, regulations, and requirements at the time of shipment of their waste to another site, which then became contaminated, would not be liable for costs of cleanup of the recipient site. And again, let me stress, it is in with compliance with the existing rules and regulations. In addition to identifying liable persons, our proposal also declares certain persons as not being liable. These include persons who became owners or operators of the site after the time the contamination occurred and who did not know and reasonably should not have known of the contamination. Our goal here is again to not address liability on innocent parties, but clearly if there's speculation in being able to buy property that may have been contaminated, those individuals should be held liable for their speculation. Second, we specifically exempt site owners or operators if the site became contaminated due to the migration of a hazardous substance from other property. The federal liability policy was designed to allow the government to reach into deep financial pockets to finance remedial action, and then let that party and any other responsible party subsequently fight amongst themselves over the distribution of those costs. The department's proposal would establish liability only for the persons who caused, contributed to, or exacerbated the contamination. This is a fair and equitable approach, we believe, and it's also implementable. Let me point out that if we face a situation where a broader liability scheme is needed, where in fact we have an individual who is clearly guilty, but because of the way the state's liability law is written, would not be able to be touched, we have recourse. The federal Superfund law provides such an avenue. Specifically, once a state has expended funds for a cleanup, it may go into federal court and seek cost recovery under the broad liability provisions of Superfund. Only if circumstances warranted would we expect to use this approach, but it is available. In addition to the liability section, the department is also proposing several other amendments as follows. One, emergency clause. Emergency clauses proposed so the act may take effect immediately. This is important to allow the department to begin implementation, particularly rule development, as soon as possible. Also, an emergency declaration would allow the proposed fee increase to be implemented by the July 1st effective date, ensuring that the program that's outlined here can be implemented. Two, the effective date for repeal of the existing fee and CERCLA matching fund. We propose to tie together the date for the CSSI fee increase, that is the $10 to $20 per ton, and the date of repeal of the existing $10 per ton. We don't want to be able to have a gap. Also, the date of the repeal of the CERCLA matching fund needs to be tied together with the effective date for the Hazardous Substance Remedial Action Fund. To accomplish these changes, we propose that the repeal take place as of July 1st. Third, no lien for natural resources damage. We propose to delete the natural resource damages from our proposed provisions and authorize the department to place a lien on property belonging to a liable party who has failed to conduct a cleanup. On further evaluation of this provision, we believe the lien provisions of Senate Bill 122 should be limited to the collection for the department's remedial action costs, penalties, and punitive damages, not to those natural resource damages, which are very hard to compute. And then lastly, on the environmental hazard notice, we are withdrawing our earlier proposal to add the term environment to the existing ORS 466-365 part of the statute. Such insertion would be inconsistent with language in other parts of the statute, and also inconsistent with agreements that were reached last legislative session dealing with that environmental notice legislation. With that background, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'd like to have Dan Cooper, again, the chair of our Remedial Action Advisory Committee, be able to address that, address you. At the end of that time, what I would like to do is to try to be able to bring into some sense of reasonableness the four bills you've now heard, how they relate in terms of the problems faced with hazardous waste, and then turning to the issue of fees, how are those dollars raised, how much is included in all, and then what are those cumulative impacts on businesses, typical businesses throughout this state.
Can I ask a question before we move on? I'm kind of interested in the deletion of your of natural resource damages. I recognize that it's hard to calculate, but it seems to me that anything that, I mean, how do you calculate damages from a lot of things? I mean, you know, it's easier to find dead fish lying on the side of the stream than it is to figure out what the costs of damage to the groundwater are.
Mr. Chairman, with the strict liability, we feel we don't have to have the proof of dead fish to be able to establish liability. That's one aspect of it. Al, maybe you can expand a little bit more.
Mr. Chairman, let me just add a few words. We do provide for the liability for damages to natural resources that would be established in the liability section. We felt that that to also provide a mechanism to recover those via a lien provision was really an additional, it was a safety net we really didn't need. The amendment for liability provides liability for natural resource damages.
Yeah. So it's just the lien side of that, not the fact of whether there are damages.
So you could still get it. Go get a judgment on that basis. It's just whether you could collect on it would be the issue. Senator Cairns.
Mr. Chairman, we're going to ask questions now. We're going to hear from the other witness and then ask questions.
Looking at Mr. Hansen's testimony, he said he'd be happy to answer any questions, so I sort of jumped on it. I don't know.
However you'd like to proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hansen, I am not now convinced that we should abandon joint and several liability, and we're not going to take your time now, and we're not, you know, we'll obviously have to grind through the bill, but that's just a matter of notice, I think. I'm just death on limitations liability. The strict joint several liability that is attached to the Superfund by extension, I think, can logically run to a state Superfund, and only clear and convincing evidence will have to persuade me that we shouldn't extend it here. All right, that's just a matter of notification. It doesn't come in the matter of a question, it's a matter of comment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cairns, I would add that I think it is a judgment call. Our judgment call, and it's not, I mean, a clear cut, we came down as I recommended. You will hear from other people that will, in fact, argue strongly that. The only thing to keep in mind is what I mentioned is that although we have to expend the funds first and then go into federal court to recover, we do have the ability to utilize that.
I understand that. Mr. Chairman, just to point out that you violated the law of acronyms. You've delivered us something that's HSRAF and is unpronounceable, the Hazardous Substance Remedial Action Fund. I understand what lust is, and certainly I would suggest the Fund for Removal of Substances of Hazard, FROSH.
Listen,
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Brennan.
Fred, since that subject of joint several was brought up and you mentioned there were exemptions, I don't have a copy of your amendments, but do you exempt
there? It should be attachment 6.
In the back of this?
Yeah.
Yes. I haven't gotten through it and looked at it, and you said there were exceptions in it. Do you exempt the state in any responsibility in joint and several?
No. Well, other than, of course, if they fall in as any private would. State would be treated exactly the same as
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brennan, there is an exception. Normally that would be the case. The state or local government is considered any other person would be considered that. There is a provision in the liability section that we're proposing to add that does not consider state and local government within the realm of a person, whereby in instances where that government receives property as a result of involuntary actions. For example, tax collection, or where there's an involuntary transfer of property to a local government or a state, those parties, the receiving government, would not be considered a responsible person or liable person.
I brought this up in the last session, if you'll remember, maybe, Fred, about the state's involvement in cleanup, and they may in fact be contributory to further worsening of the situation, and whether or not then that bill exempt, I can't remember the number now, but exempted the state from responsibility should that occur, and wondered if that provision extended to this too.
Mr. Chairman, in Senator Brennan, as Al outlined, except for if you got it back in the tax rolls, state would be treated as any other party and therefore would have to utilize the defenses that are provided for other parties. If they did everything in its active due care, that would be a defense if they're really a third party. If they're an active participant in it, they would be treated as anybody else and potentially responsible up to the extent of their culpability.
Okay.
Proceed.
I would then ask Mr. Dan Cooper to come on up and... He's our employee.
I apologize.
On loan from EPA, Dan Cooper is a volunteer, heavily involved.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I've asked your assistant to hand out a copy of my testimony. I tried to be a little more environmentally conscious and confine it to one page.
Touché.
My name is Daniel Cooper. I'm the chairman of the Department of Environmental Quality's Hazardous Waste Remedial Action Advisory Committee. As Mr. Hansen told you, the committee was appointed last fall and has worked with the department in putting together the language of the bill that's in front of you. I don't want to talk about the copy of the bill that you've got. We've worked long and hard with them for some of those provisions, and we've reached an agreement with them on those parts. What I want to discuss are some areas where the committee has some recommendations that go beyond what the bill has in front of you. As I indicate, we have reviewed the recent liability proposal that Fred just explained to you, and the committee does accept it, though the action the committee took was less than all of the members present, so I wouldn't want to imply that all the members of the committee necessarily agree with that in toto. But the committee did, as a committee, endorse the limited liability provision. The committee does believe rather strongly that the funding sources set forth in the bill are not going to be adequate to clean up all of the hazardous waste contaminated sites in the state that we expect the department to find as it goes through the process. The committee thinks that while it has endorsed the new $20 a ton fee on materials placed at Arlington, that the legislature should adopt, possibly through some form of constitutional amendment if necessary, a broader based funding source to pay for the cleanup costs. We would suggest either a tax on petroleum or other chemicals, the imposition of up to a $1 a ton tipping fee at municipal landfills, with the recognition that municipal landfills may be one of the more problematic sites you have to clean up around the state. They've been accepting hazardous waste with very little control for years, just as common accepted practice, and they may be a real potential problem. Or any other broad-based funding source that someone can come up with. We don't mean to be limiting in our recommendation to you, either in form or in substance, but we want you to recognize that we think this is a potentially large problem. And as Mr. Hansen explained to you, the new regulations that you're being asked to adopt and the federal government is adopting deal with the problem of hazardous waste and how it's handled in the future, with the attempt to make sure that new problems aren't created. To impose fees on members of industry who are in compliance with those new regulations to generate the funds necessary to clean up the past practices that have led to abandoned, contaminated sites where there is no responsible party to pay the cleanup will place, in our judgment, an undue burden on industry if those fees are the sole source of cleanup funds. That's why we do not believe that going beyond the $20 a ton at Arlington is advisable, and why we think that the, jumping ahead on my testimony, that the underground storage tank remedial action fund to be assessed by the department, the commission under this bill, should be limited to administrative costs only, so that that pays for the staff people to go out and make sure that leaking underground tanks are cleaned up. But to the extent that the state needs a funding source to clean up leaking underground tanks, that you not look to the people who are in compliance, but you look to your broader base funding source to pay for those cleanup costs as well, the same as you would any other contaminated sites. We looked at a proposal for creating some form of an amnesty or an early detection incentive program to give property owners the incentive to come to the state and confess that they've got a bad site, and in that way escape some form of liability, if not complete liability. Several states, or at least one state, has adopted such a program. The committee, without wanting to adopt the Florida provisions in toto, liked them and made a recommendation that such a form of amnesty be considered. And lastly, we believe the DEQ should be designated as the lead state agency in the area of hazardous waste cleanup, with the responsibility for coordinating all other state agencies involved in such problems, and that DEQ have the authority to preempt local governments who may adopt inconsistent regulations in this area.
I've got a question for you.
Okay. I'm ready for questions.
You have stated that you don't think the increase in the Arlington fee from $10 to $20 is adequate to pay the costs of this program. Can you give me a little, can you explain why a little bit more fully?
Well, the members of the committee in general, sort of both sides, environmental and industry, I think are pessimistic that that source of funds will be sufficient to pay the cleanup costs for the potential number of contaminated sites, given people's experience as to how costly a cleanup may be, given some of the potential problems that are generated. Part of that's tied to cleanup levels. How clean must the site be to be clean? This bill has a provision in it for determining those cleanup levels in an administrative process later that I think the committee is comfortable with, but cleanliness may be hard to achieve even with modest and appropriate cleanup levels. There were also concerns that the Arlington site might not always be the source of as much activity as it presently is now, that okay. Federal law may be decreasing the volume of materials deposited there. We're moving away from using that kind of a site as a disposal site for hazardous waste. On-site disposal is being encouraged by federal law, so that in the future that facility may not be receiving anywhere near the volumes that it receives right now. So it would be drying up as a source of funds, just as you've gone through the process of investigating a lot of sites and determining what cleanup is necessary.
I want to ask you another question, but first, just for the committee's benefit, how much money are we talking about putting into the state super fund by increasing the fee?
About $2.5 million per biennium.
That
is, for each $10 is worth, at today's level of disposal, in our estimates, about $2.5 million, meaning about $5 million at the $20 figure for the biennium.
But I presume you're already using the other two and a half. The $10 fee that's currently collected is going to something else.
Let me be clear on that. Currently, the only purposes that may be used for that fund, 85% to 100%, may be used for the matching amount on a federal Superfund cleanup site like Corvallis.
Okay.
15% may be used for investigation of potential sites. No money may be used for a non-NPL cleanup out existing.
Right.
So we're talking about both expanding and increasing it.
So we could expand what that fund could be used for and increase the fund from $2.5 million a biennium to $5 million a biennium.
Yes.
Okay. Now, getting back to you, it seems like we're sort of, we really haven't done much, I mean, nobody can tell us what kind of cleanup is going to be required in this state.
That's
is that
right.
a fair statement?
That's probably right.
And so it's your committee's judgment that this is a far too conservative estimate of the cleanup that will be required.
I believe that's correct, yes. We don't know the answer as to how much money will be needed. The information the committee members seem to be having from their diverse sources was that they don't believe it's going to be enough.
Okay, I want to pursue this just a little bit because I think it's a real fundamental question here. Can anybody give me some examples of existing Superfund cleanups and the costs?
United Chrome, $2.5 million.
Mr. Chairman, $2.5 million for the first year costs.
Right.
EPA estimates operating the groundwater treatment system for 5 years at an annual cost of $250,000. So the total present worth over $3 million. We can give you a national figure. I want to preface that with the fact that we